What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.
This is Cruise Radio.
I cruise a lot, and I always sail with travel insurance. You should, too. Get a free quote today at tripinsurance.com.
Broadcasting from the tripinsurance.com studios in Jacksonville, Florida, this is Cruise Radio. Cruise Radio.
Hey, how's it going? My name is Doug Parker. Thank you so much for making Cruise Radio a part of your day. Very happy to have you here, my friend. Coming up, we have a review of Norwegian Breakaway, and staff writer Richard Sims is here with Cruise News. As always, don't forget about Cruise News Today, the three things you need to know to start your morning. Either the feed is just opposite of this or on the Cruise Radio YouTube channel. All right, staff writer Richard Sims. Richard, what was the commercial back in the day? It was like Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat.
Yeah, San Francisco was not a treat for passengers on the Ruby Princess, unfortunately. Last Thursday, the ship wound up having, you know, kind of a minor collision, but a collision nonetheless with Pier 27, which is in San Francisco. Like I said, it wasn't a major incident. No passengers or crew members were injured that we know of. But it did result in the ship needing repairs to its dented hull. So the original 10-day itinerary wound up being adjusted to a 7-night sailing to Alaska. Passengers were given the option of going on this new sailing or opting out. And about 579 people ultimately decided, yeah, I'm just going to cancel. Now, those who did cancel got a pretty decent deal. First of all, this happened on a Thursday, and they were allowed to stay on board until 11 o'clock Sunday morning while they made other arrangements, whether they were going home or to Alaska. It's kind of like, you know, at last call at a bar. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. Mm-hmm. So they were allowed to stay until about 11 a.m. Sunday morning. Plus, they got a full refund and a 50% future cruise credit. So, you know, they actually got to stay on the ship for a couple days, even though, you know, it's almost like staying in a hotel, and got that, the refund and the future cruise credit. Those who stayed on board for what went from a 10-night sailing to a 7-night sailing, they got a 75% reimbursement and a 75% future cruise credit. So either way, honestly, I mean, that's a pretty good deal. Yeah, there's some inconvenience, and the people who originally intended to go on this trip ended up, you know, having to make other plans. But ultimately, I think whichever way you went, you still got made out pretty well here.
Yeah, no, certainly. I had some listeners on board that were contacting, you know, through the process via like Instagram and on Facebook Messenger, giving me play by play and sending photos and recordings of the captain. And yeah, like you said, it was a non-event unless you were dead set on sailing that and you saved up for a long time and couldn't go any other time. Then it was probably a big deal. But the compensation they offered and everything else, it seemed like it was a bump in the ship that got fixed.
Yeah.
So
could have been worse.
Yeah, definitely. And so a fire hazard is delaying the launch of MSC's luxury brand cruise ship.
This is a story that could become more interesting over time. It's interesting enough to start with, but it started when MSC Group kind of announced that their upcoming Explorer 1, the delivery of the ship was being delayed, which, by the way, this was the second time the ship's delivery had been delayed. And as a result, the inaugural sailing was getting canceled again for the second time. Why? Well, it turned out that this time, a couple of fire-resistant panels that are used in the construction of the ship failed their inspection. That was the first domino falling. And we may not know for a while just how many dominoes were lined up, because now those panels have been recalled, and there are questions regarding what other ships might be impacted, you know, what ships used these, and whether some of those are ships being built now. Some of them are ships that have already been constructed and might have used these faulty panels. For example, Carnival Corporation said they knew of at least one ship which used the panels in question, and they added that at the time, those panels passed the inspection. It sort of raises two questions. One, how faulty are they, and what happened? How much did they fail the inspection by? Now, you know, it seems to me like there's a bigger issue here, because let's say you had to pass, you had to be fire resistant up to, say, 2,000 degrees. And let's say it went to 1,999 degrees. You would fail inspection, but, you know, just barely. It'd be like, you know, this isn't a huge problem, but we are going to, for safety's sake, we're going to recall these, replace them, whatever. But you would think that if that was the case, someone would be saying so. Someone would say, you know, the cruise industry is very, very good at, when a problem comes up, jumping in front of it and saying, listen, it's not as bad as it seems. Here's what you need to know. But no one has come forward and said that. So we don't know how many ships might be impacted. We don't know how many ships out there might have these faulty fire panels in them. And we don't know the circumstances around the failure. Why did they fail in this case, but they didn't fail in the case of the Carnival ship, which has not been named, but which Carnival has said is out there? And by the way, I should specify, not necessarily a Carnival cruise line ship, but a ship in the corporate, the Carnival corporate umbrella, which uncovers, you know, a lot more ships. So there's a lot of questions out there, and it's something that we'll have to keep an eye on as it unfolds to see just how far-reaching or how minimal, it could go either way, this turns out to be.
Yeah, what's interesting to me, though, is that, like, now Carnival Corporation came out and said, look, we have one ship and whatever happens with that. But, like, with Royal Caribbean Group and other these companies that have been contacted and asking for statements, they've been, you know, deferring all these people to CLIA. And, of course, CLIA, that's a lobbying arm of the cruise industry. They're only going to say good stuff. In fact, I don't think their copywriters know how to say anything bad. So it's just interesting where you're just getting lip service if you get deferred to CLIA. You know what I'm saying?
Very much so. Very much so. It's, you know, it's CLIA's job is to present the cruise industry in the best light possible at all times, like any lobbying arm. That's what a lobbying arm does. And so, you know, anytime you read a statement from CLIA, this is not to say that CLIA is not a, you know, respected source, but it is to say that you have to take what they say through the proper perspective. You know, just like if you go to some other news source, you have to always be thinking, what is this particular, you know, is it an advertising agency? Because an advertising agency is going to spin it a certain way. Is it a lobbying agency? They're going to spin it a certain way. Everybody spins everything. I mean, we should all be dizzy with how much spinning is done all around us. So, you know, it is going to take a while for this to unfold and for the, I was going to say, for the truth to come out, but who knows if that'll ever even happen.
And speaking of ship fires.
Yeah, in a completely unrelated story, at least as far as we know, the Morella Discovery had left Amber Cove and was on its way to Grand Turk when an engine fire broke out in the wee hours of the morning. The crew put the fire out. There were no injuries. Everything was fine. But the ship returned to Amber Cove so that they could do an inspection and determine the cause and see if there's any other problems that needed to be addressed. Once there, they had to make arrangements for the passengers to be flown back to the UK because the ship was going to be there for a couple days waiting for the inspection. And that is where that voyage began. The current cruise was canceled, and so was the next one. As of the time that we're recording this, I checked about 10, 15 minutes ago, and the ship is on its way back to Port Canaveral, which was where the next sailing was set to depart from. So we'll have to see if everything's okay there and if they're able to take the next cruise. But the current cruise and the next cruise were canceled, so it's really the one beyond that that we're waiting to hear word on. But luckily, again, you know, fire at sea, as they say, every single cruise you will hear, you know, the captain or the cruise director come on and they give you the whole warning about, like, don't smoke on balconies and things, because fire at sea is one of the biggest hazards that a cruise ship faces. Luckily, the fast-acting crew dealt with this really well, really quickly. There was no problem. I mean, you know, if the fire alarms hadn't gone off, people probably wouldn't have even known what was going on. So good job to the crew and, you know, moving on.
Disney Cruise Line has quietly increased some prices.
And it quietly is definitely the word. You know, I guess if I was raising prices and I had the option of not saying anything, you know, I would. I mean, anytime your local grocery store raises the price of milk, in this case, it's Disney Cruise Line. And I have always wanted to do a Disney cruise. I have not done it yet. I'm a Disney fan. but I'm a little bit nervous about them because, you know, so many children. And so on a place that with that many children, the restaurants that are geared toward an adult audience obviously are kind of a, you know, almost like a heaven on earth. So it's probably not terribly surprising that across the Disney fleet, they've boosted the price of those hot spots. Ships that have Palo, I believe I'm pronouncing that correct, and the Palo Steakhouse saw the price go from $45 to $50. Not a big deal, $5. Meanwhile, dinner at Remy and Enchante, the latter of which is only available on the Disney Wish, went from $125 per person to $135 a person. So a $10 boost there. And I mean, I think if you're already paying $125 for dinner, you're probably not gonna squirm all that much at an extra $10.
In a 2019 lawsuit that was settled in 2021 against Royal Caribbean, is seeing new life.
Yeah, this is a hard one. This is really kind of heartbreaking. So listeners will recall that back in 2019, an 18-month-old little girl named Chloe Wineland she died after accidentally being dropped by her grandfather. They were on the Freedom of the Seas. It was docked in San Juan. There are many different versions of this as the lawsuit has gone on, but basically he was holding her up to a window or out a window. There was no actual panel of glass there. He accidentally dropped her. She fell 150 feet to the dock below and passed away. So right from the beginning, just a terrible, terrible story. Chloe's parents filed a lawsuit, but a judge dismissed the case in a ruling in 2021, saying that the open window in question was an obvious danger and the grandfather's conduct, not negligence on the part of Royal Caribbean, was the cause of the girl's death. The family appealed, and a three-judge panel, the appeal went before a panel, and the panel was deciding, you know, do we allow these people to bring a case, or do we agree with the original judge and say, no, there's no case here? The three-judge panel here basically said that a jury might find that there was negligence on the part of Royal Caribbean. They also said that, you know, there is a chance that a jury might say that Royal Caribbean could have foreseen an adult holding a child near the window. So it is going to continue. This will apparently go to court. It's worth noting that already, the grandfather, when there was a trial or a hearing in San Juan, which is where this took place, the grandfather was put on 3 years probation because he pled guilty to negligent homicide in the Puerto Rican courts. So, you know, now, I don't know. I mean, I guess I, on the one hand, you understand this family has lost their child and they're seeking, you know, what they see as some form of justice toward the people they blame, which would be the cruise line. I have to think that for me personally, I would just kind of want to let it go. I don't think that I would want to continue having to deal with this. But heartbreaking, just a terrible, terrible, sad story.
Yep, sure is. And the listener question comes from Roman in South Florida. He said, "Hi, Greg," which isn't my name, but we'll roll with it. "My travel agent said I could remove tips once on board to save money. Now, I came across your website, and it looks like the money actually goes to the workers. Can you provide any clarity on this?"
Okay, well, first of all, Roman, I'm going to say that you should fire your travel agent. Hopefully you're not paying them. There are travel agents that you pay, but hopefully you're not, because you shouldn't have to. Most cruises, the travel agents who book them are paid by the cruise line, not by you. But in any case, whether you have employed them or they are just someone you know, I would not use them, because anyone who recommends that you take the gratuities off of your bill is not someone who I would want to deal with. Can you do it? Yes, of course you can. You can go down to, on almost every cruise line, you can go down to guest services and you can request that the tips be removed, and you can tell them the lie that you're going to personally tip everyone individually. And, you know, I say it's a lie. I'm kidding. There are a lot of people who do prefer to do it that way. But what they don't necessarily, either they don't recognize or they don't I don't want to say don't care, but that's kind of what it feels like, is that, yes, you might tip your room steward, or yes, you might tip the person serving you at dinner, but for every person you interact with, there are 10 behind the scenes who you are not dealing with, and this money helps go to them as well. Yes, there are the arguments about, you know, if the cruise lines paid more, then they wouldn't have to rely on daily gratuities, and that a gratuity is something you decide to give, not something that you're forced to give. There are all those arguments to be made, and many of them are valid. But at the end of the day, no, you should not remove the gratuities. If you are looking to save money, you know, we can give you a bunch of money saving tips. Buy things in advance. For example, if you're going to buy the drink package, buy it in advance. It's almost always cheaper to do so than when you get on the cruise. But one way that we will not endorse as far as a money saving tip is to take money out of the mouths of people who are very, very hardworking. If you're doing that, then in my personal opinion, and this is just my opinion, if you can't afford the tips, then you probably can't afford the cruise. So just, you know, don't go.
Fair enough. Staff writer Richard Sims, as always, thank you, buddy.
As always, thank you for letting me be the local cynic.
Have a question or a comment for the show? Send an email or voice memo to Doug@cruiseradio.net.
A big question we get at Cruise Radio is, how do I know if I need trip insurance? Simple answer, if you're getting on a plane, taking a road trip, or getting on a cruise ship, you need to have travel insurance. Hey, it's Doug Parker from my friends at TripInsurance.com. Not only does TripInsurance.com protect your vacation investment, but it also gives you peace of mind in case anything were to go wrong on your trip. How do they do it? They offer three different types of trip insurance policies. Good, better, and best. One policy for every vacation budget. But it doesn't just stop there. They're up to 40% lower when you shop around on other comparison sites. Plus, TripInsurance.com offers 24-hour customer support before, during, and after your trip, online claims assistance, and travel alerts to let you know what's going on at your destination. But find out for yourself. Check out TripInsurance.com.
Have a question or a comment for the show?
Yeah!
Send an email or voice memo to Doug@cruiseradio.net.
Baher and his family took a Western Caribbean cruise out of New Orleans earlier this year on Norwegian Breakaway, and he joins us on the line. How you doing, buddy?
Good, Doug. How are you?
Good. Good to talk to you again. It's been a little while since we were on that, what were we at? Transatlantic crossing on Carnival Celebration back in November of last year, right?
Yes, that was a fun cruise.
It sure was. So let's jump onto the ship here. You're over in the great state of Texas, and you had to come over to New Orleans. Now, it's a couple, like, what, one or two states away? I can't remember. But do you drive that, or do you fly that?
We drive. It's supposed to be a seven to eight hour drive, but it ended up taking us closer to about 11 hours or 11 and a half hours. Just there was a lot of just accidents and such heading to New Orleans area.
So you make your way to New Orleans. Any pre-cruise time out there?
Not this time. So because that drive, like I mentioned, took longer, by the time we got to New Orleans, it was fairly late. So we just decided to grab dinner, just rest up in the hotel, and just have an early embarkation morning start. We've sailed from New Orleans before, so we've done the whole New Orleans downtown vibe and everything. Mm-hmm. So we just figured it's time to just rest up and have an early start.
How close to the pier did you stay?
Like around 5-6 miles away. It wasn't right in the middle of the New Orleans hustle and bustle. Probably took about 10-15 minutes to get to port.
All right, so you go to embark Norwegian Breakaway. You mentioned you had an early embarkation time. Was it early enough where you kind of beat the crowds?
Yes, for sure. It was a 9:30 to 10 o'clock slot. That's for our check-in time, and it was very smooth. Really, from the moment we got to the cruise terminal to the moment we sat down in the waiting area, it took a total of 8 minutes. And that, of course, includes going through security and x-ray, talking to a rep to get our passports checked and key cards and everything. And I like the fact that we got our key cards then instead of sitting outside our cabin door.
Gosh, 8 minutes. That's almost like you were staying in the Haven, that kind of service.
Yeah, I think we just beat the crowds. And then we ended up sitting there from actually a little bit before 10 o'clock to, I think they called boarding at 11:15, I believe, or 11:10. And kind of an interesting thing is while we were in the waiting area, when we were proceeding part of the check-in to the waiting area, they gave us this big boarding card. It lists the like a big group number on it. So they do that so that whenever it's time for them to call the boarding groups, they can easily tell people that they were in the right group. And they basically they pick those cards up from us on our way to the gangway.
So you make your way on board Breakaway. What were your first impressions? And were you on one of the last sailings that actually still had to do the traditional muster drill?
Yes. So we did have to do the muster drill that was at 3 o'clock. Just to back up, our first impressions, when we liked what we first saw when we got on, it was on deck 7 forward by the theater area. We just walked to the deck 7. Ship looked quite clean, modern. You couldn't really tell that it was like a 10-year-old ship. Then we went up to the open deck areas where like deck 15, 16, and 17. I felt like the pool deck, deck 15, seemed a bit like squished. Mm-hmm. Like there was not a whole lot of lounge chairs or open space. And then later on the cruise, I realized that they have all that, like the deck parties and such that they normally would have in the Odyssey Carnival, that they would normally have on the Lido deck. They would hold them in Spice H2O, which is on the back of, or on deck 16 aft. And the other thing that I really liked with the ship was the waterfront area, which is on this like perimeter outdoor area on deck 8 on mm-hmm. both sides and also the aft. So they have like a bunch of bars there. There's seating areas for the specialty restaurants. There's also like comfortable cushions that you can sit, you know, without necessarily being in a restaurant or anything.
I was going to say you had a lot of time to explore the ship because you got on like in 8 minutes around 10 o'clock or so, and the staterooms didn't open for another, what, 3.5 hours or so?
Yeah, correct. The cabins were not ready until 2:30.
Wow, look at that. There used to be 1:30. They kind of trimmed the staff around there. And now they're pushing it back to 2:30 or so. Okay. I see what's happening there. So you make your way to your cabin once it opens up. What kind of stateroom did you book, and how was it for your family throughout the week?
So we booked 2 interior connecting cabins, so nothing fancy there. This was actually our first time as a family after cruising for like 20 sailings together for us to get 2 cabins instead of 1. So it was really nice having that extra space, second bathroom. We don't feel like we're on top of each other all the time. The cabin was nice, the comfy beds. It did lack storage space, like shelves and drawers. But the bathroom was actually quite the opposite. The bathroom was pretty spacious, and it had a lot of places where you can put like your toiletries and stuff. The shower door was glass, and it wasn't really small. And even like getting out of the shower, you're able to, you know, dry yourself while you're in the bathroom. I'm just comparing it with like Mardi Gras Celebration, and it's pretty tight. The plugs are pretty standard. We always, of course, bring like a non-surge protector to plug our stuff in there. One thing I did like on NCL is like there's the 2 buttons right next to the door on the inside, of course, a do not disturb and a makeup room. So whichever one you click on, it basically puts a light outside the cabin. So then your cabin steward knows. Another thing that I was quite surprised and really liked was whenever the captain or the cruise director did any important announcements through the PA system, we could hear the same announcement basically coming out of the TV at the same time as the live announcement. It was like literally like half a second like off, and which I thought was very cool. So we didn't have to like run to the door to try to, you know, open the door to hear what they're saying, if it's an important announcement or not.
Yeah, because it's always weird, right? Like you always think, okay, I should be poking my head out here and listening. But if it was important, they would be, you know, coming on the all call and doing it. But it's always a weird thing. So it's cool that they actually have it where you can pipe it right in there to your room. Anything else you want to hit on the staterooms?
Not in the stateroom, but just the stateroom hallways. The fish design on the carpet, it was nice and useful, I guess, in a way that you can tell which way's forward. You just follow the way the fish are swimming. That way you don't have to, like, ask someone or, like, which way am I going? Am I going forward or aft?
That would really be helpful, especially if someone took full advantage of that drink package, you know?
That's right.
So let's talk about the dining on this 7-night cruise. And we'll start up at the top at the buffet area, which I believe NCL calls, what, the Garden Cafe?
Yes, that's right. It was great. There's a lot of food variety there. Hot dishes, cold. There's Asian, there's Indian, there's American, there's carvings. Desserts were good as well. There's also an ice cream, like a Baskin-Robbins style, being served by a crew member. Different flavors, of course. There's also a regular ice cream machine as well. I like that I saw there's like when you're entering the Garden Cafe, there's these hand washing stations, and there's like 3 or 4 on each side. There's a sweet crew member that's always standing there. And she was like the star of the ship. because she was always singing the Washi Washi song, and she made up her own songs, and she just made it fun. The other thing I want to mention there in the Garden Cafe, just something minor, but I thought it was nice having the napkins and the utensils are actually at every table instead of you grabbing them from like the food stations.
Okay, yeah. Makes a lot of sense there. I'm trying to think of the layout of this one. Is it indoor, outdoor on both sides, like forward and aft of the Garden Cafe, or is it just one side where you can sit out there?
It's basically on the aft, and think of it as right in the middle. Both sides are basically the same.
Gotcha. Okay.
My recommendation would, if you see something you like, don't just grab it right away. You just walk the whole length first, see what's out there, and then come back and grab a plate and then pick what you want. And then you have the seating area between there and the windows.
Gotcha. Okay. Makes sense. Now, outside of the Garden Cafe, where else did you eat around the ship? Now, I know that Norwegian doesn't really have like the set dining times per se, but they have a couple of different quote unquote main dining rooms. So did you do any time in those main dining rooms throughout your sailing?
We did a couple of, there's three dining rooms on this ship, the Breakaway. There's Savor, Taste, and Manhattan. They all have different decors, but it's the same menu across the three dining rooms on the same night. But the menus change day to day. We ate in two of them, Manhattan and Taste. The food was good. It just took a while to get our food. The appetizers took like 45 minutes after we sat down and ordered. But just like some observations in the dining rooms, they're both the same, where we had tablecloths on both nights, and pretty sure they have it on every night. The waiter handed us a hardcover menu without asking for it, so we don't have to like scan the menu with our, you know, with our phone. And then I also noticed that the tables seem more separated or more distance between them versus like on Carnival, where they're, you know, really, really close to each other. And also there were like, it seems like there was less interruptions during dinner. Like there weren't like photographers walking around trying to take your picture, and some guy would, you know, trying to have us buy shots or whatever.
How was your food in there throughout the week, though?
It was good. Like I said, we went there twice. It was nice to see different menu than what we're used to. But we enjoyed the food once it came.
Did you say it took 45 minutes to get your appetizer on the first night?
Yes. Actually, not just the first night. The second time we went as well was the same. So that kind of discouraged us a little bit to going back to the dining room, because my son wasn't feeling well for one or two nights, so we decided we didn't want to risk it and ordering food and having to leave the dining room. So we just decided to eat in the Garden Cafe another night and for dinner, which we normally don't eat in the buffet area for dinner. But we were quite surprised. There was a lot of good selection, and we were actually happy that we ended up going to the buffet area.
Wow. Okay. And then outside of the main dining room and the buffet, where else did you eat? Like any specialty restaurants on this sailing?
Yeah, we did the teppanyaki. We just had one specialty restaurant part of our free at sea, and we decided not to do any or pay for any additional specialty. The teppanyaki was good. Those chefs, they put on a good show, of course, you know, as you're cooking and everything, and the food was delicious. So I had no complaints there in the teppanyaki.
Were your kids entertained?
Yes.
That's cool. Sure. Other places to eat around the ship, like I'm trying to think here, like, you know, Carnival has, of course, all the, like, the Guy's Burger Joint, Blue Iguana. Are there any poolside eateries or anything with NCL?
No, and that's one thing I kind of realized is the buffet is big, it's huge, but with, like, Carnival, you have all these different, like, venues. Like, the pizza's in one place, the Guy's is another place, you have the Blue Iguana across from or on the side of Guy's and so forth. But here, it's like, it's really just the, well, at least from what I saw, hopefully I'm not missing anything, you got the dining room, the three dining rooms, you got the specialty restaurants, and then you got the buffet area. There wasn't really like other, like the pizza was part of the buffet area. There are many other specialty restaurants, obviously, on the ship. We just didn't try them.
Oh, how about the sports bar there? The, what's it called? The Local?
Oh, yes, you're right. How can I forget that? You are absolutely right. I'm sorry I forgot that. Yes, and that actually, we ate there twice. It's a 24/7 place, and the food was really good. It's like pub foods. I got like fish and chips on one night. There's loaded nachos, and the food was really good.
How was the entertainment on this 7-night cruise?
So the shows in the theater I thought were good. We had an illusionist, I think his name was Neil Croswell. There are two main shows that the Breakaway does. One is called Six, which is a musical, and then there's a Burn the Floor, which is this modern ballroom dancing. I'm personally not into musicals. I still ended up just going and watched Six just to see it. A lot of people loved it, but it's just not my thing. The Burn to Florida was very good. They're really good dancers and acting and everything. Other entertainments outside of the theater, there's Howl at the Moon Dueling Pianos. That goes on from 9 at night to 1 in the morning for like several nights. They were good. One thing that I felt was lacking, at least compared to Carnival, was comedy. There were only two comedians. They were okay. And they repeated their show. So really, if you end up seeing their show once, that's it. And that's it for the whole week. I'm used to Carnival where there's 6 to 8 comedians on a week long, and they normally don't repeat shows. So I definitely missed that vibe. My biggest really issue with the entertainment was in the atrium area. So there were a lot of activities. They had their like games and such. The issue is like with popular stuff like Deal No Deal. They had Love and Marriage show, which they call Not So Newlywed Game Show. It would be packed, and you can't get a seat for one or two people, let alone a family of four. And I don't understand why they just don't put those popular shows in the theater instead, because definitely there's a demand or people want to watch it, because not only all the seats are taken, there's a tons of people standing, and I'm sure there are people that are walking by and they're like, I don't want to stand for an hour. So I'm just going to not go to the atrium and go somewhere else. Oh, and also I can't forget, there was an absolutely amazing band that played in Sid Norman's Poorhouse. That's on deck 8. They play like these old classic rock songs. They have like a drummer, an electric guitar, like there are like 2 or 3 singers. They were really, really, really good. Nice. They walked the whole lounge.
So sounds like a little hit and miss, but seems like it was pretty good though.
We made the most of it. It was,
yeah.
Overall, I just miss the comedy.
Does that ship have a Starbucks off the atrium?
Yes. Okay. And I believe it does not. It's not included in your drinks package, I think, unless you upgrade your drinks package.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, it's right next to the atrium.
So how were the sea days as far as crowds and congestion?
It was pretty packed. We were at full capacity. We had 4,700 guests, which I think if you look at the double occupancy rate is like 3,900 or so. So we were like a 120% capacity. We had 2 sea days. The first sea day was nice weather. Like the pool area was just packed. Actually, everywhere seemed like it was pretty full. We're not like pool lounge people, so that really didn't bother us there. But like in the atrium and the kids club, it was pretty packed. The second sea day was the day before we got back to New Orleans, and it was cold and raining and windy. Because that was the case, there was hardly anybody up on the open decks. And then, of course, the atrium was more packed than even the first one.
So when you say it was like super packed for like if you're going to the Garden Cafe during peak hours, either breakfast, lunch, or dinner, was it super busy up there and like shoulder to shoulder?
No, not quite shoulder to shoulder, but sometimes it would be hard to find a seat or find a table.
Mm-hmm.
But because there's so many tables on both sides, it wasn't too much of an issue. I don't think we ever waited more than a minute or two to find a table. But we did find ourselves looking around for a table. We couldn't find one. And there's, like I said, so many seating areas that eventually someone is going to get up and leave, and you just have to quickly go get it. Or even if like the table is not clean, you just find a crew member and ask him politely, him or her politely, if they may please clean the table, and then that's your table. So it wasn't that bad.
Okay. So the casino on these breakaway class ships, they kind of run like carnivals do, that basically when you're transiting the ship, you're going to walk right through it. So how was it as far as the smoke situation in and around? Because I know some of the Norwegian ships have a dedicated smoking area, and they used to have a dedicated just non-smoking area, and the rest was smoking. How was this one set up?
So we're not casino players. I didn't spend the only time I walked into the casino, I could smell a little bit of the smoke. But it wasn't, I think you're right. I think there was like a section aside that had smoking and one that didn't. So I always went around the non-smoking side. And even the non-smoking side did smell a little bit of smoke, but it wasn't like overwhelming. It wasn't to the point where I said, I want to like skip deck 7 completely and go up to 8 or down to 6 to avoid it.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay, fair enough. So let's talk about the ports of call on this 7-night cruise. Give us the first port of call, a highlight, then we'll move to the next one.
So the first one was Costa Maya in Mexico. I booked independently with a beach club called Maya Chan Beach Club. It's an all-inclusive, and it was great. They arranged like transportation for us to and from. They gave us a large private palapa that right by the beach. comfy chairs, tables, hammock, all you can even drink, water floaties. The service was amazing. So the water was not very pretty. It wasn't really their fault. It was like the seaweed and seagrass and all that. But they cleaned up as best as they could. But thankfully, the area in like the beach club itself was nice and enjoyable. So it really didn't really bother us. The next one was Harvest Key, which is NCL's private island. And it was a beautiful day. So there is like a huge pool. There's a beach. There's a wildlife experience that you can see like butterflies and such. There's a lagoon. There's a lighthouse that you can get up to do the zip lining from if you wanted to do that. We got off the ship quickly and we secured some like lounge chairs by the pool, and we ended up spending half our time at the pool and half our time at the beach. And then one note for Harvest Key is your drinks package is not included. There are no food, no free food, like some of the other private islands with other cruise lines. I heard also that the food was pretty pricey and the drinks were pricey. So we decided we wanted to cool off anyway, like by lunchtime. So we decided to just walk back to the ship, have lunch there, get some AC, and then head back. My daughter and I did this manatee paddleboard excursion. You basically like stand up on this. It's like almost like a stand-up paddle, but instead of using paddles to move, you're using your feet. You're almost like going on like some stairs, mm-hmm. but it's just two. You just kind of like press on it, and it makes the paddle go. And so, and we actually did end up seeing manatees, which I was surprised. The next one was in Ruatan in Honduras. Again, I booked independently with a company there. We saw some monkeys, held a sloth, and we did some zip lining, which was a big highlight for us, mainly because I've done zip lining before in many ports, but this was our first time. My 7-year-old was able to zip line by himself, and he totally loved it. And then the last port was Cozumel. We had actually 4 ports instead of 3. We booked independently again, this time with Nachi Kokum, which is an all-inclusive, as you know, and that's our go-to place in Cozumel when we want to do an all-inclusive, which I was really glad that we did, because there were actually 7 ships that day, and Nachi casted 130 people inside. So we didn't really, regardless of how many ships are there, it didn't really affect us at all. And while you're at Nachi, and look, you can look down the beach and you can see Mr. Sanchez, and I can actually see how packed it was over there.
Oh, wow. That's
although we had a good time with Mr. Sanchez before.
Yeah. Good call there then. Very cool. I didn't realize you brought up a good point, because a lot of listeners may not know this either, that Harvest Key does not have a buffet. I just learned something, and I've never been there before, but out of all the interviews, I don't think I've ever heard that before.
Yeah, I knew that in my research before going there. I'm glad that we went back to the ship. Like I said, not just for lunch or saving money, but it's also, we just wanted some to cool off a bit.
Were you able to tell, like, when you docked there, because there is a dock at Harvest, could it hold 2 ships or just 1?
Like, we definitely were the only ship there. I don't know if we can dock a second ship. It would be miserable, honestly, if there was a second ship there.
Yeah, kind of like Costa Maya when you have 3 ships there.
Yeah. One other thing to mention, not like a specific port, but just in general, getting on and off the ship in the ports, I love how they don't have photographers that are pushing for taking your picture, especially like, you know, when they slow down, like getting off the ship, like when they want to take your picture when you're on the gangway and it like holds up all the line. So they had none of that. They did have a photographer outside of the gangway, but even they were not pushing for pictures. They also give you a towel when you're off the ship, like right, like when you exit the gangway. So that was nice because you didn't have to take one from the ship. And then when you're coming back, you just give your towel back. You just give them your cabin number, and then they give you like a little cold, wet towel as well, and some water, lemonade. So that was nice.
All right. Yeah, absolutely. You make your way back to New Orleans. How was your debark process?
So we did self-assist. That started at, I think it was like 7:45 in the morning. I was actually surprised at the number of people doing self-assist. I think it was more than I've ever had before. It seemed like a maze to get off, because they made us go like walk through the casino and then out the port side by the lifeboats. And then we went back indoors into Manhattan dining room. We scanned our cards there to get off the ship. And then we went back out to starboard side, walked the entire length of the ship to the gangway. And then we exited from there. So like I said, it was like a maze getting out, but of course you're just following the line. So it wasn't like you're lost or anything. In total, it took about 45 minutes to get off, which I thought was a little bit long for a self-assist. But in any case, and then once we got to the cruise terminal, New Orleans does have the facial recognition software, so we had our passports at hand ready to go, but we never had to show it or even get it out. Like, you just stand there, it takes your picture or it looks at you and then gives you the green check mark and you're good to go.
You were mentioning you were traveling with the family and you have two little ones. Did they take advantage of the kids club at all?
Yes. Well, one is not so little anymore. I have a 7-year-old and a 15-year-old. So the kids club Splash Academy, that is for the 3 to 12-year-olds. And then Entourage is for the 13 to 17. My daughter, the teenager, she didn't really go to Entourage, but my son loves Splash Academy. The issue that I have with Splash Academy, with the kids club in general, is a few things. For one, the registration process, it truly sucks. Like, you have to do the registration on board with them. You have to sit down with the camp staff. They have to explain everything to you. And it took a while, and there was a long line of people trying to do that. And then when you get to drop your kid off or pick them up, it just takes their process just takes way too long. Because, like, when you're picking up your kid, at least I'm used to, like, you know, I go there, I tell them my kid's name, I show them my card. They call the kid is here within 30 seconds and we're out. But here they just get your information and then they wait for other people, other parents, and then they do a big group call out. So if you're one of the first people there, you can be waiting for, you know, a little bit of time until they get the kids. And then also, like, they have you set a password with them when you're picking them up. And then they have like this almost like a double barrier for the kids. And then they ask the kid and the adult the last name, even though they've seen me a dozen times, they know who's my kid. I still have to go through the whole thing. So I just felt like, I mean, I'm all for, like, child safety and everything, like making sure the right person's picking up, but it just seemed like overkill. And then the biggest pet peeve with me with the kids club was they ask you when you're dropping off your kid, they're gonna ask you where you're gonna be. And the first time they asked me that, I thought it was a bit strange. And I asked them why, and they said, well, just in case. But in my mind, I was thinking, this doesn't make any sense. So if I'm going to the theater and there's an issue, are you really going to come down to the theater and try to find me?
Right.
So we also had, because this was a lot of kids on board, they could actually max out the number of kids. And so they have something called virtual queue. And so they don't tell us that when we're in line, but when I was trying to drop off my son, they said, sorry, max capacity. And then they showed us how to do the virtual queue. And it basically just like has a notification on the app and it tells you whenever they have an opening. That was fine. We just couldn't drop them off then, had to come back and drop them off. But all in all, I mean, I honestly just, my kid loved camp so much. I just put up with all the shenanigans that they had dropping off and picking up for his happiness. So,
sure. Any first time tips to offer anyone sailing Norwegian Breakaway?
Yeah, I got several. So first thing is, make sure to reserve your dining reservations and theater shows before the cruise when it first opens up online. And then be aware that there's a box office that's right next to the theater. So when you get on board, I would recommend just going there. Even though if you have your dinner and your theater shows done, there are some other shows like comedy and that you would need to reserve. Or you don't need to, but if you don't, then you got to wait in line. And they basically 10 minutes before the show, anybody that doesn't show up that had a reservation, they open it up for everyone. And then if you have the free at sea package with like the 150 minutes, Wi-Fi minutes, make sure to log off after using it. And otherwise it'll eat up all your minutes. And then keep an eye on your remaining minutes when you actually log off. And I say that because I had a couple of times an instance where I had some remaining minutes. And then the next time I try to log on for a few minutes, it said 0 minutes left. And I know that I had some left and I logged off. So I went to, there's an internet manager that sits, it has like a little desk that sits across from guest services. I just went there and then he looked it up and he just reinstated them without a problem.
It seems so antiquated too, right? Like giving you minutes for the Wi-Fi.
Right. Or at least give us a package that's slower speed. And if you want to upgrade, you can.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was, I didn't feel like I needed more minutes than that, but there were definitely options when you, well, even before the cruise, you can upgrade to unlimited, or even on board, you can upgrade, whether at the beginning of the cruise or even mid-cruise as well. So they definitely have many options for you to pay more money, give them more money to do, you know, upgrade stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Did you have any more tips or were you done there?
I have one other one, or maybe a couple more.
Okay.
This may sound silly, but don't, the key cards actually come without, at least ours didn't come with a hole or a punch hole in there. And so you'll need a lanyard that has like a transparent glove or something, and not like one with a hook. And don't bother trying to get a punch holder, because if you do and you punch your card, even if you're careful not to punch behind the strip, it's actually going to demagnetize the card.
Oh,
we learned that hard. Also, I mean, anyone that cruise knows this, but like, just turn off your automatic time adjust for your, like your phone, for it to adjust time when you're stay on ship time, but listen to announcements, especially for any time changes, because we were surprised, this being a Caribbean sailing, we actually changed time. We did a 1 hour forward on one of the first nights, and then we did a 1 hour back on the one of the last nights. They were both done at like 2 a.m. So this was, I just, like I said, I felt it was a bit weird doing this on a Caribbean sailing.
Were you sailing during the spring forward thing? Was that why?
We actually, that was our, that morning of off our embarkation, which was kind of another reason why we didn't want to really go to New Orleans downtown and everything, because we knew we were going to have a 1 hour forward.
Yeah.
And have one less hour of sleep.
Gotcha. Okay. Makes sense then. Well, looking back, what was the biggest highlight of this cruise?
So off the ship, I would say it was the ziplining. Just seeing the smile on my 7-year-old standing on that platform, or many multiple platforms, and just going down. I will cherish those. And I took several pictures, so I'm glad I did. On the ship, I think I'm going to go with that amazing band that I talked about at Sid Norman's Poorhouse.
All right. Very good. And in closing here, your final thoughts of Norwegian Breakaway.
I thought it was a great ship. We had a good time despite being at max capacity.
I've been talking with Bayer about his 7-night Western Caribbean sailing aboard Norwegian Breakaway out of New Orleans. Good talking to you again, my friend, and catch up soon.
Thanks, Doug. I appreciate you having me on.
All right, Dougie, let's see what we got for you, buddy. Cruise Radio is produced at the TripInsurance.com studios in Jacksonville, Florida. Get cruise news, ship reviews, and money-saving tips every Thursday on Cruise Radio. If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show. If you want to help spread the word, give Cruise Radio a 5-star review. Find Cruise Radio where you listen to your favorite podcast or online at cruiseradio.net. I'm your announcer.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals. Save big money at
Menards. What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.